Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And this long weekend has been Thanksgiving weekend, and my attention was drawn specifically to Thanksgiving because it is my favorite holiday. Thanksgiving is the best holiday there is. And I didn't realize it, but last year, 2021, should have been a glorious national celebration of the 400th anniversary of the very first Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims and the Indians and all of that. But there was nary a mention of the 400th anniversary of Plymouth Rock and the Mayflower and the Indians and the corn and all of that. Because the criminally insane gang of sex perverts who seized power in 2020 effectively canceled any official observation of the 400th anniversary of Thanksgiving. And I just want to make a note of it, and I want to let all of you know that I doth protest. I feel like I was robbed of a celebration. And so here at the McBurney compound, we celebrated the 401st anniversary of the first Thanksgiving at Plymouth Plantation. And I want to read, and I'll link to this article over at Breitbart. It was very well done, the true history of Thanksgiving. But I want to read from William Bradford's book of Plymouth Plantation, when William Bradford described the fateful moment when the Pilgrims realized that they had landed in an unsettled area and that there was no way to turn back and winter was coming. And he wrote the following: "What then could now sustain them but the Spirit of God and His grace? Ought not the children of their fathers rightly to say, 'Our fathers were Englishmen who came over the great ocean and were ready to perish in this wilderness, but they cried out to the Lord, and He heard their voice and looked on their adversity. Let them therefore praise the Lord, because He is good, and His mercies endure forever. Yea, let them that have been redeemed of the Lord show how He hath delivered them from the hand of the oppressor, when they wandered forth into the desert wilderness, out of the way, and found no city to dwell in, both hungry and thirsty. Their soul was overwhelmed in them. Let them confess before the Lord His loving kindness and His wonderful works before the sons of men." William Bradford, circa 1621. It gives new meaning to the proverb, "The effective fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much." Who would have thought that the effective fervent prayer of one man could have generated 400 years of manifold blessings unequaled in the history of all mankind? Who would have thought it? But the Lord looked upon them and their adversity, and He blessed them. And so anyone who says America was not founded as a Christian nation, they're liars. And anyway, thank you, Mr. Bradford. Thank you to the Pilgrims. Thank you to the Indians who helped save the Pilgrims that winter. It's a true story. All right, and so now where do we go from there? Well, fast forward 400 years. And the criminally insane sex perverts who seized power in 2020 are rapidly exhausting the nearly inexhaustible mercies of God. We'll start in the dark irony file, where Hot Air reports one of the people lobbying for justice reform in Washington, D.C., was one Kelvin Blow, a 32-year-old activist with the D.C. Justice Lab. And here's the irony. On the night the city council there in D.C., on the very night the student council was passing the so-called justice reforms, which are actually similar to other woke crime legalization measures across George Soros land, on the very day the reforms were passed, Blow was shot dead by someone in the streets of Washington, D.C. No arrests have been made. And none can really be expected, reasonably, as at least 10 other murders have piled up since Blow was killed. It's just a dark irony, more dark than anything else. But there you have it. That's the state of the capital of the nation founded. The nation that was pushed forward and generated by that one man's prayer 400 years ago. There's the state of the Capitol. People being murdered so often, the cops don't even have time to look for everybody who did the killing. And that takes us to the fear and loathing file, where Walmart, Chesapeake, Virginia, Tuesday night, listen to this, a mass shooting at a Walmart left six people dead. A mass shooting left six people dead. That's urinalism. I'm pointing it out. Anyway, they do point out that the shooting was carried out by an employee before he took his own life by turning the gun on himself. That's way too many words. Anyway, so now, wait, that's not the end of the story. Following a search by SWAT, police announced, quote, "There is no risk to the public at this time," unquote. Oh, I beg to differ. I beg to differ, officer. We can't go into a store anymore without considering the possibility that we could be shot to death inside the store. There's no risk to the public? Okay. Anyway, maybe this is what a society who murders 100 million children deserves. We can't go to the store without worrying about being shot to death because we deserve that level of angst in our life because of all the innocent blood that we've allowed to be shed. And so I guess that's, I'll move on from there. America getting what she deserves. From there, we move to the Killer Queen file, where we check in with the Colorado Springs gay club massacre killer. The public defender for the killer there, in the Axios says, calls him the suspect in the mass shooting. Suspects? Okay. Anyway, the public defender for the killer there in Colorado Springs made a court filing this past Tuesday, says their client is non-binary and uses they-them pronouns. Okay. So you hear that, and I could almost hear the Limbots. These are radio hosts programmed in the likeness of Rush Limbaugh. Not as talented, not as clever, but in his image, all of them. They immediately would say, "See, he's gay." And I had to stop and think about that because I thought maybe he's gay, maybe he's non-binary, maybe he's gender fluid or confused or whatever you're allowed to say about yourself these days. That could be that, but it could be that he's just saying that now to mock the establishment. The establishment that will be trying to prosecute him, he's putting it right in their face. Because anyone can say that they're anything and then demand that everyone take them seriously, including the judge and the court. And this is the standard, by the way, set by the people in that bar that night that he shot. They set that standard. I mean, and how far does it go? If we have to respect his decision now to identify as non-binary, if we have to respect that, should we also respect his decision to identify as a mass murderer in a gay bar? Are there pronouns for that? And if he insists we use them, should we? I mean, I suppose we should, right? I mean, come on. Someone had to have the courage years ago to push the bounds out beyond straight to gay. Then another brave soul pushed them out beyond gay to bi, and then beyond bi to trans, and now beyond trans to non-binary. Now this guy, he just wants to push the bounds out past murderer. And shouldn't we all respect that? I mean, we don't want to be on the wrong side of history, do we? When the murderer's rights movement recognizes all of its heroes someday. This guy will probably be among the murderer's rights movement's heroes. We don't want to be on the wrong side of history. They, them. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, up in New York City, there have been a number of attacks on gay bars over the past several weeks, and the local media there had been hyping them all as hate crimes, of course. And now there's been an arrest made. Sean, 34-year-old homosexual freak weirdo, looks like a roadie for Dead or Alive back in the 80s. Anyway, they caught him chucking a chunk of concrete through a window, and it turns out, he was mad about something or someone, and so he was throwing rocks through windows at gay bars to prove some sort of a point. And so, let's see, the New York Post reports the most recent attack came on the same night of the Colorado Springs gay bar massacre. So all the homosexuals were terrified, but not too terrified to go to the club. And the New York City gay bar owner at which the attack occurred on the same night as the massacre said that all these attacks won't stop him from, quote, opening the bar at 5 p.m. on Sunday like always, he said. God hates a proud look. And he hates a proud gay bar owner who insists on opening his gay bar on Sunday, like always. Despite the fear and terror and panic in the gay community over their tremendous persecution. And I got one more here from the Queering of America file related to the Colorado Springs gay bar massacre. There was a press conference at which the Colorado Springs police chief identified each of the five people killed and mentioned their pronouns. Listen to what the chief of police said. Killed were Kelly Loving, she, her. Daniel Aston, he, him. Oh, Derek Rump, he, him. Ashley Paw, she, her. And Raymond Green Vance, he, him. The chief of police actually had to do it. He might as well have had to get down on his knees and kiss the feet of a statue of Karl Marx. But he did it. And by the way, it appears that all the people killed were normal. I mean, they all use normal pronouns, chief. So was it really necessary to list their pronouns? Couldn't you have just said they were all normal? No, you can't say that. That's a hate crime. And then, on top of that, to add insult to injury, the district attorney was asked whether the non-binary designation of the killer would impact his ability to prosecute the case. Which means this is all insanity. He should have said, how can you even ask me that? Are you out of your mind? But he didn't. He answered the question as if it's a legitimate question. The district attorney actually said this, quote, "For my purposes, I refer to everyone I prosecute as defendants. And that's what I'll do in this case. Thank you, sir. May I have another?" Wow, you don't get something from nothing. You can have freedom for free. You won't get wise with the sneeze you in your eyes from all the ones you dream might. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us through the Marxist humiliation exercise that the justice system is being inflicted with there in Colorado Springs. It's embarrassing. And so, appropriately, from there, we go to the Queering of America file, where up in New Hampshire, New Hampshireites have elected their first trans state rep. Trans state rep. It's easier to say that if you're drunk. Trans state rep. Just slur it all together. Let's see. This would be Democrat Nashua, New Hampshire Rep. Stan Stacy Lawton. A trans-identified male. Now, what does that mean? Okay, so I guess since it identifies as Stacy, then it must be a trans-identified male. I don't know what that is. But I think that's a guy dressed up like a girl, calling himself a girl. Hence, we designated him Stan. Stan Stacy Lawton was arrested just days after being re-elected. Re-elected, I said. Thank you, sir. May I have another? He was charged with stalking a woman in violation of a restraining order. That's right. And now up there in New Hampshire, no one's quite sure what to do because New Hampshire has no rules for the expulsion of elected officials in the event that a crime is committed.
How's that difficult?
I know. Isn't that just the criminal justice system? I mean, I would think once he's sent to prison that they don't know what to do. They don't even know what a man or a woman is up there, so they don't know what to do. By the way, a crime is committed. The post-millennial, which is the closest thing we have left to a conservative media amongst the youth, they're full of urinalists as well. New Hampshire has no rules for the expulsion of elected officials who commit crimes. Not in the event a crime is committed. If a crime is committed, nobody gets expulsed because we don't know who did it. We're talking about if they committed a crime and they're convicted and all of that. Anyway, so this guy, he committed a crime. He violated a restraining order stalking a woman. Now, the woman he was stalking made no public statement as to how she identifies, leading authorities to presume that she is normal. As opposed to the first trans rep, first trans state rep up there, Stan Stacy Naughton. Okay, we're not sure what to do in the great granite state there because we're all very confused. Now, from there, we go appropriately enough to the criminally insane file, where a new poll is out, a Rasmussen poll, and it turns out about 60% of American adults are against drag shows for children. So just sit there and let that sink in, ladies and gentlemen. America has gone from William Bradford down on his knees thanking God to 40% of Americans aren't sure that children shouldn't be invited to drag queen shows. 40%. So in the poll, 60% of American adults view drag queen story hour as inappropriate for children. That's right. That means 40% of us, a significant plurality, think it's okay. 10% in the poll are unsure about drag queen story hour. Maybe they're just unsure altogether. What does that even mean? I mean, had any of us even heard of a drag queen story hour before, like, 20 minutes ago? Anyway. Good news, though, America. There was transpartisan opposition to taxpayer funding of drag queen story hour. Transpartisan? Really? Anyway, so when you break the poll down, folks, things aren't really all that much different than they've always been. A third of the people are openly wicked. That's a third of the people are Christians. A third of the people are reachable. Except for the 10% who are unsure. But maybe they're unreachable just because they're too stupid. They're not even sure what they should say about drag queen story hours. Well, maybe they are reachable. I don't know. Maybe only 20% are reachable. And only a third of us are actually sane. And a third to 40% are our enemies. And they're the enemies of all that is good and right. They're the enemies of innocent children. Anyone who's the enemy of innocent children is my enemy. And I am prepared to make war upon you. And I'm not just talking about a culture war. I'm talking about an actual war. Actual violence. Anyone who would harm a child, violence should be executed against that person. And it should be done judiciously. I'm not calling for a civil war. I am calling for the violent punishment of people who want to harm children. I am calling for that. And if that doesn't happen, eventually, normal people are going to take it into their own hands to do what's right against these criminally insane sex perverts. And we don't want to see that happen because that would be very ugly. Okay, now, deeper into the criminally insane file. I have a report from MSN. MSNBC is quite disturbed at all of the attacks on drag queen story hours over the past year. We have an analysis from the LGBTQ advocacy group GLAAD. And their analysis shows that there were many, many protests and actions took place against drag queen story hours for kiddos all across the country. Now, most of them took place in smaller rural communities where rednecks just showed up and said, What are you talking about? You invited the kids where? Get on out of here. Smack someone upside the head and just chase them down the street. Call the sheriff for crying out loud. But GLAAD is also quite disturbed that there were protests and actions against Drag Queen Story Hour in New York City, Philadelphia, Las Vegas, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Boston, Miami, Denver, and Phoenix. And a number of incidents involved violence or weapons, according to the report. Oddly enough, no one was arrested, and there were no news reports about violent attacks on Drag Queen Story Hour, which leads one to believe that this is mostly all just made up. There were a few angry parents who showed up, and they might have been carrying guns for all we know. It's legal to carry a gun in most places in America still. But nobody shot up any Drag Queen Story Hours, except maybe the one weirdo, the non-binary freak in Colorado Springs, but we'll find out about it. I don't think he was one of the Proud Boys. And I don't think he had just left a Bible study or anything like that. So GLAAD just made up a bunch of stories about 100 or so attacks in 47 states. It's basically open season on drag queens in America, right? MSN points out this report doesn't include the November 19th attack on Club Q in Colorado Springs, where a drag queen performance had been held hours earlier. But we think that might have been a hate crime, too. We're very scared. We're persecuted, you know. What else do we have from MSNBC? Lawmakers in Texas, Florida, and Arizona have said they want to ban minors from drag queen events. So we've, I know, I know, isn't there already a law against, if there's not, you know why we didn't have laws against this? Because you didn't need a law against this. We had other laws, like corrupting the morals of a minor. Child molestation laws were applied to this. How did we lose sight of that? I mean, from William Bradford to lawmakers saying they want to ban minors from drag queen events. Surely the end is near. Maybe not the end of the world, but the end of this particular episode of what we've all been experiencing, what we've all been experiencing as a relative peace and prosperity and all of that. Perhaps the end of all that is upon us. And perhaps that's how it must be. In fact, it's so bad. We go now into the humiliation of America file, where the governor of Alabama has had to stop executions because they can't figure out how to execute a murderer. That's right. In Alabama now, the governor's asked the attorney general to stop seeking execution dates for the latest two murderers until there's a full review of the state's execution process. Why? There have been three uncompleted executions in a row. That's right. Most recently was the uncompleted execution this past Thursday of Kenneth Eugene Smith. That's the state's second such incidence of being unable to put an inmate to death in the past 2 months and the third since 2018. They can't figure out how to kill a guy. A murderer. They can't figure out how to kill him. Now, the governor there says it's not their policies or their officials. It's not law enforcement. Certainly not the government's. Certainly not the governor's fault. No. She said this is legal tactics and criminals hijacking the system that are at play here, says the hapless governor who has the authority. She has the authority to execute this guy herself if she wanted to. She could carry it out. She doesn't have the courage to do that. But she has the authority to do it. The governor could grab a pistol and walk into the guy's cell and blow his brains out. But she doesn't have the courage. She doesn't have the wherewithal. She doesn't even know what she's doing. This is all reported to us from Politico, who are laughing up their sleeves at the fact that they've tied the conservatives into so many knots they can't even figure out how to kill a guy who needs to be killed, by the way. Alabama Arise, a nonprofit that advocates on behalf of the poor, says the state should agree to a moratorium on executions and urge legislators to do their part to reduce the unfairness of Alabama's death penalty system. Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurdy. Welcome back. Good to have you with us. We check in with Brazil. I'm going to check in with Brazil really quickly because I had called for the military in Brazil to overturn the sacred democratic election of the communist and install the normal sane person. And it looks like Brazil's military is about to do that. They are going to block the election of the communist and defend the former military commander Bolsonaro. And this could be the start. Meanwhile, ironically, in Arizona, where protests are building over the stolen election there, it's quite possible that if the protests in Arizona get serious enough, we will watch simultaneously as the Latin American military does the right thing and the American military executes a coup against the people. Who could have thought it would happen in our lifetime? I can see the Arizona National Guard mowing down protesters in Phoenix while the Brazilian military installs Bolsonaro and kicks out the communists. I could see that happening. I know that's really pessimistic, and I hate to be that way, but things are not looking good. It's almost as if our enemies are in control. And not just the way it was before, where there's always been a certain level of wickedness and evil and all of that, but I mean actually in total control and able to execute their will upon us. Case in point, from the Bad Religion file, a Hong Kong court has convicted Cardinal Joseph Zen. That's right. You may remember last May, Hong Kong's National Security Police arrested the 90-year-old cardinal on suspicion of collusion with foreign forces. Where have we heard that before? Collusion, I tell you, that's what he's guilty of. So they arrested him on suspicion of, quote, collusion with foreign forces, unquote. They arrested him under the national security law that was passed in 2019 and which had Hong Kong on the verge of civil war before the epidemic all of a sudden took center stage, oddly enough. So anyway, they arrested Joseph Zen under the national security law. This triggered the national security law that had triggered the protests that had shut Hong Kong down. Anyway, they've never brought any charges against him on the national security law, under the national security law. Instead, they've now convicted him on some trumped up charges on so-called crimes associated with a now defunct relief fund, which the cardinal was associated with. So they basically arrested him under whatever they could get him for and then looked around until they could trump up some charges against him. It's just like what happened to the disciples in the book of Acts, basically. And now, so the Pope was asked by a reporter whether Cardinal Joseph Zen's arrest and trial constituted a violation of religious freedom. And the Pope basically said, nah, not really. The cardinal's pretty much getting what he deserved. The Pope actually rebuked the idea that China was undemocratic. He called China a very complex country. This is the Pope. He said, quote, Cardinal Zen is going to trial these days, I think. And he says what he feels. And you can see that there are some limitations there, unquote, said the Pope. Does anyone even understand what that word salad even meant? It certainly was not defending the cardinal. That's the one thing we can get from that. Oh, but that's right. The Pope's a communist. And the criminally insane sex cult that seized power in America in 2020 is in the back pocket of the Chinese Communist Party. Yes, and that's the Bad Religion file. Meanwhile, speaking of China, from the Widespread Tyranny file, Klaus Schwab was speaking in regards to the Chinese Communist Party on the Chinese Communist Party's TV station, which would be their propaganda organ. Klaus Schwab called them, the Chinese Communist Party, a role model for many countries. Yes. Now, he was careful to point out at the end of his comments that individual countries should be allowed to choose what system they adopt on the other side of what Klaus Schwab called a systematic transformation of the world. So Klaus Schwab is quite confident that he is participating in a systematic transformation of the world. He calls China a role model for many countries, but then he points out at the end that individual countries must be allowed to decide what system they adopt on the other side of the transformation. So first of all, he says it as if the transformation is a fait accompli, which, Mr. Schwab, I'm here to tell you, it's not. All you insane, criminally insane communist sex perverts who think you're about to wrest control of the world from us, the normal people, the Christians, we're not going to give it up. We're not going to give it up to you perverts. And by the way, don't think we didn't catch what you just said, Mr. Schwab. Oh, he says each country should be allowed to choose what system they adopt. All the while, he's been educating and installing the leaders in every country for the last 30 years who will do the choosing. And so Klaus Schwab is pretty confident in what they'll choose. And he points them to the role model, which is the Chinese Communist Party. It's widespread tyranny, Mr. Schwab. We're getting just about tired of the spread. We're getting ready to stop the spread, Mr. Schwab. And things will not turn out so well for you, my friend. I can assure you of that. How do I know that things may be coming to a head? Well, from the widespread tyranny file, protests have erupted in Beijing finally and in Xinjiang region over the insane tyrannical COVID lockdowns that the insane, criminally insane gang, the Chinese Communist Party, have inflicted upon their people. There was a deadly fire at a high-rise building that killed at least 10 people, maybe more. And it was locked down and the people burned to death. Protest videos now are coming out of China showing people in the plaza singing the Chinese national anthem and singing particularly loudly the line that says, quote, rise up those who refuse to be slaves, quote, unquote. Those are words in the Chinese national anthem, and they are being sung out full-throatedly in the streets right now in Beijing. Videos of protesters in the streets of Beijing tearing down COVID signs. So they're taking my, I was one of the first people to do that. I was in a building where I worked, and I went into the bathroom and I tore down all their ridiculous signs. And I've been doing that ever since. Everywhere I can, I tear down COVID signs, wherever they're left. I wish I could peel up the things on the floor of the stores. I can't do it. Well, in China, and listen to this. A planned lockdown was called off on Friday after residents protested and the local leaders were convinced to cancel a scheduled lockdown. By Saturday evening, at least 10 other compounds had lifted lockdowns before the announced end date. Why? Because the people are getting ready to kill these insane perverts. This criminal gang that's hijacked their country for the last 75 years. They're getting ready to kill them in the streets. So perhaps the devil has finally overplayed his hand in China. Perhaps. Now, unfortunately, just like Tiananmen Square in 1989, the world will turn a blind eye to these protests. In fact, not just a blind eye, a corrupt eye. The world is actually on Xi's side. The world is on the side of the dictators. The Western civilized world is on the side of the dictators now. Not that they weren't in 1989. In 1989, they were just in bed with them and cozy with them. Now they're outright on their side. But anyway, in Brazil, the government, here's why the military in Brazil had to act. So in Brazil, the government there, the left-wing, communist, insane government apparatus that was built by leftists over the past 30 years, just like here in America, they were freezing the bank accounts of people who were protesting for Bolsonaro. That's right. In fact, let's see, I've got a quote here from someone there in the government. The Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes. He said it's necessary and appropriate to block the bank accounts of those being investigated for insurrection. That's right. And then they did. They froze the bank accounts of at least 40 people and companies who had been linked to the protests against the communist dictator who stole the election and for the relatively normal former military commander. And this is exactly what Justin Trudeau did up in Canada. Do you remember? Against the Freedom Convoy? Anyway, I'll link to the story, but that's what was going on. And finally, someone had the courage to actually stand up and say no. At least it appears someone in the Brazilian military actually stood up and said, no, we're not going to worship at the feet of the statue of Karl Marx that you call democracy. We're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to take a knee. But meanwhile, over in the Girly Man file, members of the English men's soccer team, they did take a knee prior to their match against the United States. That's embarrassing. We have a team at the World Cup. This is embarrassing. How does this happen? How does America end up participating in such a girly man? What are you going to do? Anyway, so the English players took a knee prior to their match against Iran. And they weren't taking a knee to protest the murderous regime in Iran that has been murdering women under the guise of anti-blasphemy laws. That's not why they took a knee. They took a knee in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Uh-huh. That's like so 2020. What are these guys thinking about? The coach there, the England soccer coach, Gareth is his name. He was asked, why is your team taking a knee? It's 2022. That whole thing is over with. But he said, well, yeah, we think it's a strong statement that will go around the world, especially for young people. That is important. Does anyone understand what I'm even saying? Does anyone even understand why I'm here? Do I even know why we're taking a knee? I don't. And just in case you were wondering who won the matches between the Americans and the English and the Iranians, nobody cares because soccer is stupid. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us here. So from that embarrassment, we move into the Broad Daylight file, where I would like to introduce you to Sammy Bankman-Fried's parents. That's right. Sammy Bankman-Fried's parents are lawyers. Uh-huh. That's right. Both professors at Stanford. Yes. And Sammy Bankman-Fried applied both of his parents' names to his own last name so that he could accrue the privilege that goes with both. That's right. That's how desperate he was for some credibility. Just in case someone didn't know his dad, he took his mom's name too in case they might know his mom. So he became Sammy Bankman-Fried. That's right. Now, Barbara Fried is a tax expert. That's right. And her scholarship focuses on moral philosophy and questions of distributive justice. She holds 3 degrees from Harvard and participates in a super PAC that supports Democrat candidates in the sacred halls of democracy. That's Barbara Fried. Uh-huh, that's mom. Now, Sammy Bankman-Fried's dad is Joseph Bankman. He holds a degree from Berkeley, undergrad, you know, and then, of course, a law degree from Yale. He helped Elizabeth Warren write tax legislation. He's also a clinical psychologist who specializes in the treatment of anxiety, depression, and adjustment. Adjustment, I said, in both teenagers and adults. So Sammy Bankman-Fried's dad is one of the guys who drugged a generation of American children, including his own child. I can guarantee you Sammy Bankman-Fried is on prescription drugs at all times. Antidepressants, depressants, you name it. Sideways, this ways, that ways. This kid's got pills coming out his ears. Like most of the young people in America today, he's on drugs, which is one of the reasons they were able to pull off the whole COVID hysteria, is because so many people are on drugs. And so Sammy Bankman-Fried's parents are more responsible than most for the destruction of American civilization. And so naturally their son becomes the poster child for that laughingly embarrassing corruption that in the end is going to get a lot of people killed. I mean, it's hysterically stupid and laughable, but it's also terrifyingly dangerous, because there are societies on the planet right now where everyone's not on drugs and obsessed with entertaining and pleasuring themselves. There are. And if we're not careful, they are going to eclipse what William Bradford gave us when he got on his knees and thanked God for getting them through that winter in Massachusetts 401 years ago this Thanksgiving. And now, just not to be too upfront about their callous corruption and destruction of civilization, not to put too fine a point on it, but Sammy Bankman-Fried's mom and dad purchased a Bahamian beachfront home in a gated community with money from, well, we don't exactly know where the money is from. They are trying to give back the deed to the house, because it was really embarrassing to be caught with that. And if they figure out a way to, you know, all will be forgiven, of course. Yeah. Okay. Democrats are wondering, should they give back any of the money that Bankman-Fried gave them? Probably not. It's better to just keep it because, you know, Donald Trump might run again, and certainly all ends are justified. I mean, I'm sorry, all means are justified to that end, for crying out loud. We can't have a relatively liberal Hollywood weirdo come and embarrass us anymore. So, in fact, it's worth destroying. We'll have to burn down the village in order to save it. Sammy Bankman-Fried will provide the tinder, and his mom and dad will be right there to hand out prescriptions to anyone who's traumatized in the collapse of Western civilization. Okay, meanwhile, from the widespread panic file, the FDA is now saying, they're now saying that when they told people to not take ivermectin, and when they threatened the careers and licenses of doctors who may have prescribed ivermectin, that was just informal recommendation. We didn't really mean. So right now there's a lawsuit going on. That's right. There was a lawsuit brought by three doctors against the FDA, who they say the FDA illegally interfered with their ability to prescribe medication when it issued strongly worded statements on ivermectin back during the freakout. But now the lawyers say, well, those statements were not actually directives. They weren't mandatory. They were recommendations. Come on. We were just saying why you maybe shouldn't take ivermectin. We didn't say you may not. We didn't say you must not. Nobody said it was prohibited or unlawful. They also did not say that doctors may not prescribe ivermectin. We didn't say any of that. Come on. Haven't you heard there's been a call for amnesty? Don't you read The Atlantic? All right. So now they want to have it both ways, and they'll be able to because everyone's on drugs and insane, and the country's run by a criminally insane sex cult. So how are we ever going to hold anyone at the FDA responsible? Anyway, the lawsuit is about the prevention of doctors from being able to practice effective medicine based on hysteria from the FDA about the dangers of horse paste, which the FDA did call ivermectin horse medicine. They did that. Anyway, and so the thing is, many doctors thought they could not prescribe, or they would not, for fear of professional consequences. I remember when this happened, I was hysterical over this, because that's never happened before in the history of American medicine anyway, Western medicine. We've never had doctors convinced that they couldn't practice medicine, but they were. That never happened before, at least not here in America. And when I saw it happening, I was astonished. And I was frankly astonished that doctors weren't standing on the rooftops shouting, but instead they were cowering under their desks, afraid to write a prescription. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, there is no recovering from that. You don't recover from that. That is the end of a system. That's the end. So everyone who thinks we're going to be able to come back from COVID, I'm telling you, you're wrong. Get your ducks in a row. Get your affairs in order. There is no coming back from that. All right, now, but maybe we'll just go to the moon. Yes, from the strong delusion file, of officials at NASA say that humans could be living on the moon within the next decade. Yes, that's right. They're very confident because finally, after weeks and months of failure, NASA finally launched their Artemis rocket. And so the dim-witted bureaucrats now think that they're just a few steps away from colonizing outer space because they managed to finally get that rocket off the launch pad, you know, like they did back in 1960, whatever. And they did it like 20 times in a row. And I think we've launched like 1,000 rockets, but these guys, they got a rocket up. Now it's like, yeah, I think now let's colonize the moon. Yeah, let's go for that. In fact, they'll be securing funding. Funding's on the way. Let's see. The managing, the program manager there at the Orion Project is Howard. And Howard says, quote, like, certainly in the next decade, we're, like, going to have people, like, living on the moon, dude. I mean, the duration, you know, depending on how long we'll be on the surface, I mean, they'll be living, they'll have habitats and rovers on the ground. And so not only are we able to work in delivering people, like, to the moon, you know, like getting people down to the surface of the moon, they'll still have to have infrastructure. Are you guys writing this down, dude? Is somebody writing all this down? I don't want to forget. Unquote. That's Howard Hu, the Orion program manager over there. And some folks at the BBC, we assume we're writing all this down because it's so important, you know. Okay, and now, real quickly, let's go to the politics file where Breitbart reports breathlessly that new rules at the IRS are forcing gig workers to report any payments they get over $600 via Zelle or Cash App or Venmo or PayPal, you know, those cash apps. And Breitbart reports that as a result of President Joe Biden's American Rescue Plan Act, gig workers will now be forced to report income over $600 to the IRS. And so I don't know about the folks at Breitbart, But I've been running a small business, and I think I've been a gig worker since before anyone even knew what that was. So just like Bob Enyard and I started podcasting before anybody knew what podcasting was, I started the gig economy without even knowing it. That's right. It was me. I did it. I will go down in history as the first gig worker because I did. That's, and by the way, you've had to report income over $600 ever since I had a business 25 years ago. You've always had to report income over $600. And so this isn't a Joe Biden's fault. And in fact, I don't have any problem with reporting income to the government. I think that income taxes is a reasonable way to tax people. The problem is that the rate is tyrannical, and it's the historical equivalent of slavery. That's the problem with it. It's not that they're making me report the income. It's that they're taking like half of it.
Half?
Oh, more than half. More than half of my income, for crying out loud. Half, I'd feel like I was getting over. So my bookkeeper's like, half? What are you talking about? Have you looked at the books lately? I must confess, I generally don't keep track of the shekels as they come in and go out because it's just way too much. I just try to keep bringing them in. I bring them in as fast as I can. That's the only solution, right? Against the tyrannical, insane system of thieves and criminally insane sex perverts who want to take all your money so that they can satisfy their insatiable lusts. The only thing you can do as a normal American is just try to work hard enough to make enough money to satisfy them and hopefully take care of your kids and feed your family and stuff. And so that's what we'll do. We'll just keep trying to do that. That's what I have to remind myself, that as an American who fears the Lord and cares about your family, just try to outwork them. That's what we'll try to do. And for all of you who think we're coming back from COVID, God bless you. I hope you're right, and I hope I'm just way too pessimistic. All right. Meanwhile, we go, finally, we'll close the show from the Justice File, where Michael Connelly Lloyd has been arrested, unfortunately. In fact, he's pleaded guilty to bank robbery. Yeah, bank robbery. Good old-fashioned crime, right? No children involved, no drag shows. He's just robbing a bank. He wrote his demand note to the teller on the back of his birth certificate. And he happened to be wearing an ankle monitor while he robbed the bank. And then he had also taken his roommate's truck to the robbery. After the robbery, he panicked and threw his birth certificate and ID out the window as he fled right in front of the police, right while he passed by the police car. And then he began to throw the money out the window as well. And police picked Lloyd up at the Lazy Acres Mobile Home Park a few hours after the robbery. And here's what we want to say for Michael Connelly Lloyd. This boy is probably salvageable. I mean, hopefully he encounters a good minister in the jail that will offset the negative impact his unfortunate incarceration and his encounter with the justice system is about to have on him. He was already wearing an ankle monitor. So that means he's already been involved with the justice system. Well, this guy may be too far gone as well. But since his crime was just of the good old-fashioned sort, we thought we'd report on it just to give us some hope that everyone's not totally insane. Some people are just still robbing banks. It's a low bar, but you got to take what you can get. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and my other brother, Daryl, for giving us the inspiration to launch the podcast here all those many, many years ago. And hopefully he's still listening upon occasion, although I'm sure he's busy with other more interesting things. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.